From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
The future of the Senate filibuster, plus more details on the Trump impeachment trial emerge. Welcome, I'm Kyle Peterson with the Wall Street Journal. We're joined today by my colleagues, WSJ columnist Kim Strassel and Bill McGurn. The new Senate split 50-50 between the two parties, with Vice President Kamala Harris as the tiebreaker, spent its first days in something of a standoff as the Republican leader, Mitch McConnell, deployed some of his famous leverage by blocking the Senate's organizing resolution. And generally, this is not a contentious issue. It's a procedural issue. If one party has clear control of the chamber. So, Kim, can you give us a sense of what is an organizing resolution and how did this dispute play out?
Well, this is basically the resolution that basically sets up the way in which the Senate will operate. And the reason McConnell has some sway here is because itself is subject to the filibuster. So there has to be some agreement in essence between him and Chuck Schumer to proceed. And because they hadn't gotten to an agreement, you had this very odd situation in the Senate where even though Democrats technically have control in that they have 50 Senate members plus Kamala Harris as 51, they were controlling the floor under that authority, but the committee memberships and authority of the committees had not changed yet. And McConnell was holding out on this because he wanted an agreement from Chuck Schumer that they were not going to hold a vote to get rid of the legislative filibuster and to not therefore allow their agenda to pass with just 50 votes. And Schumer was refusing to give it. So what finally looks to have changed here is that Joe Manchin, the Democrat from West Virginia, and Kyrsten Sinema, the Democrat from Arizona, both reiterated their opposition to killing the legislative filibuster, made it very clear publicly that they would not do it and that they said their minds are not open for changing. McConnell said that was, in essence, the party agreeing to his wishes, and he said, therefore, he would move ahead with a new organizing resolution.
So it looks like for now the impasse here has been resolved, and I have those statements from Manchin and Sinema, and they're pretty strong statements. So Joe Manchin said, "I do not support doing away with the filibuster under any condition. It's not who I am." That's pretty categorical. Kyrsten Sinema said, her spokeswoman said, "Kyrsten is against eliminating the filibuster, and she's not open to changing her mind about eliminating the filibuster." Again, Bill, that looks like a pretty categorical statement. Should you take some comfort in that?
Well, I do take some comfort in. I want to see the proof because some of these people haven't exactly been profiles encouraged. They're willing to take a stand in the past. I'm thinking of Mr. Manchin, but not if it's the decisive vote. You know, if it's a narrow vote, small, but he's not creating the majority, he seems to go along. Now, on the other hand, a lot of these people would recognize that's a big thing. And you know, it backfired the last time the Democrats changed the Senate rules, you know, and resulted in tons of Trump judges getting appointed. So I think there might be something to it. And in fact, I think it's an example of how things can change. You know, when it's 50-50, any little feather on one side or the other can change the whole dynamic. Someone can die and there's a new appointee. Someone could go south. Remember, John McCain on healthcare for the Republicans. So there's going to be a lot of this. You know, Kim was mentioning the organizing resolution. And last week we saw an example because Alejandro Mayorkas was before the committee for Homeland Security, and it was delayed. He's still going to get through. But technically, the Republicans, I think they had a 7-5 advantage, could have voted him down. The problem with this is, again, gets back to horse trading. They could have done it. But the price would be very hard if you use some technicality to do that. Then the Democrats might say, forget it, we're just taking out the filibuster now. So I think, you know, as long as it's tight, we're going to see any little change can tip the balance. And we might see a lot of this going on for a while.
How about you, Kim? How much comfort do you take from these statements from Manchin and Sinema that when push comes to shove, if there's a piece of Biden's agenda that is not getting through the Senate in the way that they want, that the filibuster really is not on the table for them?
Well, look, I think anything is possible. And I think that they're going to be under huge pressure, as said. And in the past, both of them have been loyal soldiers. I do think if you have seen Joe Manchin's comments on this, though, I have been really struck by the kind of depth of fervor of his statements about how he will not go there. And I think one thing that's interesting here is that in the last year, you have seen this little bit of a shift in the Senate. It's been kind of underground, but growing, where you have seen a growing group of bipartisan senators working on certain issues together. And you saw that most specifically right in the end of last year, when it was that group of they call themselves moderates. I'm not sure I completely agree with that description, but I would say it's fair, more bipartisan kind of approaches to thing. That was the group that put together the last COVID relief bill that ended up passing. They had the framework for it. And, you know, Manchin has developed a lot of close ties to a lot of Republicans. And it's pretty clear that he feels that if he were to go back on this word and blow up the legislative filibuster, he'd burn a lot of those bridges and a lot of the street cred he's tried to develop as a conservative Democrat, which is what he calls himself, which is really the main reason he gets elected in West Virginia. So, I mean, partly I think this might come down to Joe Manchin's future plans. Does he intend to stay in the Senate? Does he want to continue on in elected politics in West Virginia? If so, I think it would be career killing for him to change his mind on the legislative filibuster. So I have a little bit more optimism he may stay the course.
Or if he didn't change his mind on that, I mean, is it possible, Bill, that if the Democrats really push him on that they could push him away and push him into a Republican Party that it would welcome a 51st Senate seat?
Well, I think the Republican Party would certainly welcome it. He's resisted so far, whatever his calculations, but that too is up for grabs depending on how far left the Democrats move. Some of these senators are all for these things until it comes down to it. And, you know, getting rid of the filibuster is a big thing, like adding a state. It's the kind of thing voters remember and so forth. So that may, you know, all these guys are very self-calculating too. And, whatever Joe Manchin does, he has to calculate how does this affect his viability?
And it's also worth thinking about. I think the what you get with a post filibuster Senate. I mean, I see, Kim, the argument that is being made for getting rid of the filibuster, that you have all these people, they campaign, you have Joe Biden campaigning on this platform, and then he comes in with full Democratic control of Washington and can't get his agenda passed. And these people seem to be, the advocates for this seem to be arguing for a sort of more parliamentary approach to American government. But in a closely divided nation, it seems to me what you would get instead is a lot of veering back and forth, and you would get a Democratic Senate passing Obamacare and then a Republican Senate repealing Obamacare 4 or 6 years later, which I'm not sure that's a great alternative.
Well, that's exactly why we don't have that system in this country. And that's why I kind of laugh out loud when I now hear all of these Biden supporters whining about how he got elected and he has control and yet people won't let him have his way. You know, welcome to America for all history. Like, Donald Trump had a similar situation when he was elected, and he still had to work his way through the legislative filibuster. And there were plenty of things that Republicans really wanted to get done and didn't, including, for instance, healthcare reform. This is no different scenario than any that has ever greeted any president. And you hear these Democrats suggesting as that we're at some special moment, some tipping point, this once in a lifetime attempt to do something important. Well, all parties feel that way when they get put into office. And nonetheless, we have these rules for a reason. And the rules are exactly as you just described, that they allow for predictability and stability. I mean, why do we have the filibuster? It's there because it makes the case that when you want to pass really important sweeping pieces of legislation, that they have far greater chance of succeeding and being accepted by the public as a whole if they have both parties buy-in, in this case, 60 votes. We have some exceptions to that, for instance, budget reconciliations, on the understanding that, the question of paying for things in the government sometimes is a more straightforward issue and a year by year issue. So you can do reconciliation on some tax and spend issues with 50 votes. But for everything else, policy issues, it's always been understood that you want both parties to have some input. And I completely reject, do not buy any of the Democrats' arguments at the time that somehow that lesson is not valid for these times.
Hang tight. We'll be right back. You're listening to Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive, with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. Kim mentioned budget reconciliation a moment ago. That's the process that the Senate can use to pass things with only 50 votes and a tiebreaker, bypassing the filibuster. So, Bill, I mean, is this what we're going to get over the next year, 2, 4 years? Is this the method that the Democrats in the Senate are going to try to use to pass whatever agenda items they can put in that reconciliation box?
It looks like it. And it looks like, I believe in the short term, they'll get away with a lot of that. But, you always pay a price for this in the longer term. And the price may be overreach and so forth. Look, also, Joe Biden is talking a lot about unity. Unity doesn't mean that all the Trump voters are going to agree with Joe Biden's agenda and push it through. But one of the reasons for the lack of unity is the way we're going beyond the proper process when people are taking shortcuts. And the most unifying thing in Washington is actually legislation that goes through the process, and that is compromises made built into the process. The process is what makes the losers think, well, I had a fair fight and I lost and I come back. Well, when people shortchange the process and use gimmicks, that's the thing that really polarizes, even more, I would argue, than the substance sometimes. The process, when people just run roughshod over, and the Democrats, have a record of doing that. And I think they will get most of what they want if they do in the beginning, but I do think it'll come back to bite them in a big way if they go this route on everything.
But does budget reconciliation then become a way to sort of undo the filibuster without actually undoing the filibuster, Kim? I mean, there are procedural limits on what is allowable under budget reconciliation. But as I understand it, if the Democrats wanted to, they could overrule the parliamentarian and put more stuff in there than is allowable under the current rules.
Yeah, so the thing we're talking about here, the actual term in the Senate, is the Byrd Rule. And it is the governing principle that says that you can only use reconciliation and 50 votes for actual tax and spending items. And let's be really clear, I am in favor of reconciliation, and both parties have used it aggressively in the past on tax and spending issues. I mean, this is, for instance, how Republicans passed their tax reform at the beginning of the Trump administration. And I think that Democrats are entirely within their rights to, for instance, look at those provisions that are in their latest COVID relief plan and those that truly do deal with issues of taxation or deal with issues of spending. Sure, use reconciliation if the Senate parliamentarian agrees that they fit the definition. But let's be clear, the Byrd Rule is, in practicality, simply a legislative filibuster. Okay. It was designed to make sure that people didn't use reconciliation to go around the filibuster. And so if you're going to disregard the Byrd rule, overrule the Senate parliamentarian, you are, in essence, breaking the legislative filibuster. And that's why, you know, good on Manchin and Sinema for saying that they're not going to vote to kill the legislative filibuster. But question number two for both of those senators and other Democrats is, are you going to essentially do the same thing? Just under a different name. And I think hopefully somebody will start asking them that question soon.
Meanwhile, the news on impeachment is that on Monday, the House transmitted the impeachment article to the Senate. But late last week, there was a deal struck between the Senate leaders to delay the trial of President Trump for 2 weeks, kicking it potentially to February 9th. But the framework from there still is not clear. Bill, for example, there's no agreement, it seems to me, on how or whether to call witnesses. And on Monday night, the Democratic leader, Chuck Schumer, said that he doesn't even think that's necessary. He said, I don't think there's a need for a whole lot of witnesses. We were all witnesses.
Right. So we're surprised that a Democratic Congress that impeached Trump in the last hours with no real hearings or evidence or so forth is now finding it odd or finding it difficult to figure out what the path is to have a trial for an ex-president who's impeached, given that the purpose of impeachment is to remove a president. I think in these ways, this is again going to come back to bite the Democrats. They've always played with a different set of rules. You know, in the first impeachment, Nancy Pelosi just announced it rather than having the House vote on it. And I just think if you're Joe Biden, the last thing you want is an impeachment, especially one where I believe that Donald Trump is likely to be acquitted on the actual charge of incitement that they've sent up there. So I think they're trying to figure out how it is. I think Joe Biden doesn't want it, but he's afraid to say he doesn't want it because probably most Democrats in the House and the Senate do want it. So I don't see how, as a new president with a very ambitious agenda, pursuing the old president helps. Look, I was in the same position after the last election. You know, there were a lot of people that wanted, you know, Hillary Clinton indicted and so forth. And I just don't think that's what you do when someone's lost an election and is out of the way. I think you just live with that. Now, if there are other people who are appointees, and especially career officials who are abusing, no, those, I think it's open season on them. But I think we let ex-presidents rest. We let the losers of elections rest and move on with the new agenda and the new president. And I just don't see how this comes out well for the president. We have an excellent editorial. And it you know, points out, it may even create sympathy for Donald Trump. It gives him kind of a stage to make his case and continue to blame. I just don't see how this is in the interest of President Joe Biden and the agenda he wants to pursue.
Another interesting development is we now have an answer to the question of who will preside over the trial. The Constitution says this. It says, when the president of the United States is tried, the chief justice shall preside. And so, of course, in the first impeachment of Trump, there was Chief Justice John Roberts surveying the scene from the Senate chair. And the question, Kim, for weeks now has been, what about an ex-president?
Yes, and Chief Justice John Roberts has seemed to signal his own reading of that by saying that he's essentially not going to preside over this second impeachment. And so we're going to have Senator Pat Leahy, who is a Vermont Democrat and the president pro tempore of the chamber, preside over Trump's second impeachment trial. And it seems really notable to me that, you know, look, John Roberts, the first impeachment, he looked like a man being tortured most of the time. And I didn't really blame him because it really was so much theater. I expect he doesn't want to be part of this the second time. And it was probably a hard call because, you know, the Supreme Court there's a, almost a signal there. Some people would suggest that by agreeing to do this, that maybe the court was weighing in somehow. The court's been in a very tough place in this all along, especially we'll see too. There's a potentiality that maybe the court could even be brought in to answer this question about whether or not you can impeach a former president. Not certain that they would render judgment there. They could well say that's a political question, but this is something that still needs to get sorted out.
But it does seem to me that the absence of the Chief Justice is at least a problem of presentation for the Democrats. So Senator Leahy issued the statement essentially confirming that he would preside, and he said, "The President pro tem has historically presided over Senate impeachment trials of non-presidents. When presiding over an impeachment trial, the President pro tem takes an additional special oath to do impartial justice according to the Constitution and its laws. It is an oath that I take extraordinarily seriously." That's the end of the quote there. And not disputing that at all, but it does strike me as a problem of presentation, Bill, that you're trying an impeachment of a Republican president and the presiding officer is a Democratic senator.
Well, Kyle, I'd go further. I think you're exactly right. But it's a problem of looks because it's a problem of substance. And I think it's just the latest thing to drop in a process that's been badly abused and so forth. Why are we having all these questions? Because it is so out of the normal course of order that no one knows what to do. And there's arguments about every step. And that ought to give you a hint of the problems to come. But I agree thoroughly with you, except I would just say that, you know, sometimes when it looks bad, it's because it is bad. And I think that's what this shows.
So Bill said a few moments ago that he doesn't think the Senate is likely to convict. And that seems to be where opinion is going after some uncertainty about, for example, how Mitch McConnell would vote. There seems to be a congealing of opinion. Kim, do you agree with that assessment? And is there anything that's likely to change over the next 2 or 3 weeks?
I don't see it, especially... Look, if anything, you might even get some of these Republicans that have been on the fence to change their minds to be against this. And here's why. I would count right now maybe 5 or 6 Republican senators that would be potentials to convict. And they'd be a lot of the people that you might expect. Mitt Romney from Utah, Susan Collins from Maine, Elisa Murkowski from Alaska. Also add in there some very frequent critics of the president, like Ben Sasse from Nebraska, maybe Pat Toomey, etc. But, you know, if Democrats play to type, they're going to come into the Senate and you're going to have Leahy preside, which is going to look very political. And if they play to type, there probably isn't going to be a great deal of what you would call a fair process or due process. And in fact, it might look very much like the situation in the House where it was rushed. Mostly to make a statement. And the question will be whether or not Donald Trump's team is allowed to present any real defense. And again, they could be setting up a situation in which Republicans, even those who might be sympathetic to the argument that this was an impeachable offense, will feel compelled to object and not convict because of the process, because that they didn't feel as though the Senate properly performed its duty to hold a legitimate trial. So you add that to the fact that a lot of Republicans already feel that these are not impeachable offenses. I don't see any way you get 17 senators for a conviction. Barring my one caveat would be if there was some kind of incredible new bit of information introduced that actually had proof about Donald Trump's role in anything.
All right. Well, thank you, Kim. Thank you, Bill. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back later this week with another edition of Potomac Watch.